Yesterday we commenced a discussion on verse 122, and that is the last verse of the second last ruku of Surah At-Tawbah, where Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala mentions, وَمَا كَانَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ لِيَنْفِرُوا كَافَّةً. All the believers should not proceed simultaneously. Meaning when it's time to go out and defend against an existential threat. That is what jihad is. When your existence is a threat, when your property, your lives, your dignity is a threat. فَلَوْلَا نَفَرَ مِنْ كُلِّ فِرْقَةٍ مِّنْهُمْ طَائِفَةٌ لِيَتَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ وَلِيُنْذِرُوا قَوْمَهُمْ إِذَا رَجَعُوا إِلَيْهِمْ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَحْذَرُونَ. Why does a small group from every people, why does a small group from every large party not proceed to attain a deep understanding in deen, so that they may warn their people when they return to them, that they may be, that they may beware. So, what we learn from here is that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is saying, as much as jihad is, you know, necessary at the time when it's necessary, there's an existential threat. But even with that existential threat, if it's not absolutely necessary for every single person to be involved. Look, if you need every single shoulder to the wheel, so to speak, to protect your existence, then you do that. That's first priority. But if it can be done by a certain group of people and others can remain behind to continue with the study of deen, then that is how it's supposed to be and that is how it should be. See, the rationale behind this is rather simple but important. That in those days, there was an ongoing existential threat for the Muslims. Because they emerged in Mecca as something new, out of the blue. They posed a threat firstly to the hegemony of the Mushrikeen, the Quraysh leaders. Then after Hijrah to Medina, they posed a threat now to the hegemony of those who were in position of power before the coming of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And then as Islam grew, even the superpowers of the time, the Romans and others, started looking at the Muslims as a threat. So they were constantly having to defend themselves, and jihad and warfare and expeditions were taking place all that regularly, and people had to go out. But now, whilst you're protecting yourself physically, you also had to protect yourself in terms of your belief and in terms of the knowledge of deen, because verses of Quran were revealed all the time, and Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was explaining things, and things had to be preserved. So these people were going out all the time to combat this existential threat in the form of jihad. When they came back, who was going to educate them? Who was going to educate them if people were not kept behind to become educators? That's what it's all about. There had to be a group of people who dedicate themselves to not just learning the basics of deen, as I explained yesterday, but going into the intricacies to develop a deep understanding of deen. They must be then proficient in interpreting the laws of deen and know exactly what law is derived from which verse and which hadith. And this is the meaning of tafaqquh fi deen, liyatafaqqahu fi deeni. And those who go out in jihad, when they come back, they should sit in the company of those that were, you know, dedicated to studying and benefit from them. And in the time when they have an opportunity, they should themselves try and develop a deep understanding of deen. Now, the ulama have written that it is farzul kifaya, meaning that it will not be necessary about every single individual, but it is necessary upon the community as a whole that you preserve the knowledge of deen and the knowledge of Quran and the ahadith and the sunnah. Not in its basic form, but in its depth and with a deep understanding. So, one is to have to know the basics of deen. That's obligatory upon every Muslim. To know about wudu, to know about salah, to know about tawheed, to know about risala, to know about belief in the akhirah, etc. Then beyond that, memorizing the Quran, few surahs, learning to read the Quran, the masail of fiqh pertaining to sawm and zakat and hajj and taharat and all of those things. That's for everyone to varying extents, right? Those who are more deeply involved in business will have to know more about business masail. Those of us that are not in business, but we do transact. I mean, you go to the shop, you're buying, you're going to the filling station, you're purchasing. You need to know the rules and the laws pertaining to those aspects of deen that you practice in your daily life. Beliefs is obviously there, the basic beliefs. The intricacies of belief and the academic discussions around that, that's a different matter. Taharat, you know, the laws of purity, salah, zakat, fasting, hajj, etc. But within every community, there needs to be an adequate amount of people who have a deep understanding of deen. so that they can guide you when new issues come up, you know, deriving the rulings from the sources. And that people don't start doing things willy-nilly, thinking it to be in alignment with the deen. Now today, you know, this concept is important, even though many Muslim communities may not have this challenge where big numbers are going from the community in jihad, but big numbers are so occupied in their own work, in their own personal pursuits. And today you live in a society where people say, well, you know, as long as you adhere to the basic values, I'm not a murderer, I'm not an adulterer, I don't kill, I don't steal, I don't do these things, I'm a good Muslim. Everything else, well, you know, I'll read it up on Google, or I'll just apply my mind. So this is a challenge, and all the more important in today's time and age that we develop people who have the faqh fi deen, who have a deep understanding of deen, so that they can guide us. Nowadays you have different ideological challenges. There may not be a physical threat in terms of the Muslim Ummah, but there is definitely there is a physical threat in certain parts, but the greater threat is an ideological one, where Muslims sense your adherence to your faith is being eroded, where humanism is being promoted. That, you know, humanism is what I said early on, that you don't need to, you know, to be very particular about the teachings of any one of the faiths, as long as you adhere to the broad values that all humans adhere to, good, reasonable humans. I won't kill, and I won't steal, and I won't do this, and I won't do that. You know, obviously that in itself is such a slippery slope. Who's a good human? Who's a reasonable human? What is reasonable would change from time to time. What was deemed totally unreasonable 50 years ago is now deemed not only reasonable, but worthy of emulation and promotion. We know that. But all the more need, all the more reason to have people who have a deep understanding of deen, and each community needs to have an adequate amount of such persons. They don't necessarily all have to specialize in the same thing. One can specialize in banking, another can be specializing in law and in finance. So you have then within your ranks those who know the nitty-gritties of what constitutes interest and doesn't from an Islamic perspective, so they can guide the banks. You have those who know the nitty-gritties of what constitutes halal and haram, so that they can guide, you know, those who Muslim food outlets, the sector. You have those who know the nitty-gritty, so they can guide Muslims when it comes to marital contracts and inheritance issues. So you need to have those who have a deep understanding in deen in every era, and then more so in today's era because of the different ideological challenges. And hence Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala promotes this, that even at the time of jihad, do not lose sight of this. But there's more that we need to discuss in terms of the virtues of having a deep understanding of deen, the different statements of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam and Sahaba in this regard, and we will take up that discussion in the coming days, inshallah. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala grant us the understanding.